Hello and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler and welcome to another Think Rant Philosophy special. Today is 21st of April 2011 and with me is Trevor. Say hello, Trev.
Hello.
Trev is doing battle with me this week in a debate. And to moderate, we have a friend of ours, Rob Robinson. Say hello, Rob.
Hello.
Basically, just a few shout-outs before we get started. As I said, we're doing a philosophy special. The previous two that we did have been very popular on iTunes with thousands and thousands of downloads. So hopefully this one's going to be the same. Not meaning to put too much pressure on Trev there. Or you, Rob.
Yes.
Are you playing fast and loose with the words very popular?
All right, it's popular compared to some other podcasts that I'm aware of. So thanks for that anyway. You know, thanks for deflating my ego. No, I tried to scare you with the thousands of downloads there, you know, give you stage fright, but obviously didn't work. So you can download the other philosophy specials along with all the other editions of the podcast from our blog, which is thinkrant.blogspot.com, or you can find us on iTunes. You can also check out the Facebook group, just search for Think Rant, or we're on Twitter. And with no further delay, I'm going to hand over to our moderator, Rob. Would you like to carry on?
Thank you. Hello, I'm Rob Robinson, and I will be moderating tonight's debate, titled Free Will is an Illusion. For the motion is John Stabler, an armchair philosopher who is proud of the tradition and strongly believes that philosophy is still vital to humanity. John believes that free will is an illusion and is simply a side effect of our neurology. Against the motion is Trevor Williams, a philosophy graduate. Trevor wants to defend free will against John's misguided reductionist attack. The format of the debate is simple. Starting with for the motion, each speaker will take 7 minutes to make their argument. Unless there are any urgent points of clarification required, the speakers will then, in the same order, have 7 minutes to offer a rebuttal and further their arguments. When finished, we enter the more informal questions and answers section, with the speakers taking in turn to ask each other questions to highlight specific points of contention. This will last a maximum of 20 minutes. That will bring us to the end of the debate. Ultimately, the winner of the debate will be decided by you, the listener. Of entertainment, I will attempt to pronounce the speaker with the most convincing argument and award them the title of victor with all the bragging rights that go with. So without delay, I'll hand you over to John, who will present his arguments for the proposition free will is an illusion.
Thank you very much, Rob. Firstly, I would like to make clear the definition of free will that I work to, because if the definition is changed to simply mean will or choice free from coercion, as many compatibilists do, then there's no debate. However, changing the meaning of words does not solve the real problem of absolute or metaphysical free will in a deterministic or indeterministic universe. And although the problem may initially seem to be one purely of philosophy, it's through discussion that we learn of how it colours our view of the world, of other people, and ultimately their moral responsibility. When I talk about absolute free will, I refer to the ability of a person to make choices and subsequently perform actions completely free from external influence. As a general example, if we decide to eat, we do so because we're hungry. We're hungry because our bodies require sustenance, and we require sustenance because our physical bodies are machines, in effect, subject to the physical laws of the universe, just as a rock rolls down a mountain subject to the force of gravity. The causal chain of empty stomach to hunger to eating is something we see everywhere else in the universe, and we call this determinism. Every event has a cause. So every state of affairs has come about through universal laws working in a consistent manner. And if we rewind the clock and play out the same scenario with the same laws from the original state of affairs, the subsequent state of affairs determined by these laws will be exactly the same. We make choices all the time, but the fact is our choice is determined by our needs, desires, and prior circumstances. Even if we attempt to do something completely random, we do it based on the neurology of a physical brain, which has a state caused by previous causes, determining our random, in inverted commas, action. The law of cause and effect rules the universe, and we're not immune from it any more than we could be immune from any other law, such as gravity. We are nothing but machines, complex ones, I admit, but machines nonetheless. And do not let our astounding complexity and the emergence of a conscious mind cloud your judgment. A machine with a billion cogs is every bit a machine as one with 10. All of our experiences of reality, including the results of scientific method, are testament to us that our universe is deterministic. And don't let sophists who employ quantum theory and other theoretical models bamboozle you and conflate two different meanings of the word indeterminate. When we talk about the uncertainty principle and indeterminism, we're talking about our inability as observers to determine the situation of fundamental particles. We are not making the claim that the universe is not subject to the law of cause and effect, and therefore not deterministic. And even if it was shown that fundamental particles were not subject to cause and effect, it would be a fallacy of composition to conclude that therefore we are not subject to it on the macro level. Just as an atom is not visible to the naked eye, to say that therefore we're not visible, because we're made of atoms, is obviously false. The evidence suggests that all effects have prior causes, and there is no evidence to suggest that our decision-making processes are any different. And from this I therefore conclude the universe is determined. But if it could be demonstrated that the universe was in fact indeterministic, a will that is based on the throw of dice is no freer than that influenced by prior causes or by laws. Therefore, absolute free will is incompatible with both a deterministic and an indeterministic reality. That's a true dichotomy, showing that it's actually a completely incoherent concept. Many people argue that if we have no free will, if we're simply slaves to prior causes and are not truly responsible for our choices, then we cannot be held morally responsible for our actions. This is something I actually agree with. It's often trotted out as an argument against us not having free will. In that case, it's an argument from bad consequences. It's an appeal to emotion, and it's fallacious, and it fails to address the actual truth of the matter. If a wild bear walks into your kitchen and wrecks it, although we say the bear's responsible for the damage, we do not hold the bear morally responsible because it's said to be in the creature's nature. When a person performs an action and is responsible for some consequence, we confer an extra moral responsibility onto that person, ignoring the fact that their choices were nothing more but the culmination of the effects of prior causes and nature also. So what we find then is arbitrary lines are drawn so that incompetent or young people that can't understand the consequences of their actions cannot have moral responsibility, whereas everybody else, conforming to some norm, do, in fact. So in effect, people who perform actions due to a brain that works one way are not morally responsible, whereas people whose brain works another way are. And to make this distinction and say that a criminal killer deserves punishment, whereas an insane killer does not, in the context of no free will, is without logical justification, because it's based on the presupposition that these people have free will. Of course, saying that if we take the position that we don't have free will, anarchy will ensue is a non sequitur. To realise that we don't have moral responsibility in the classical sense only admits that the concept of deserved punishment is illogical, not that utilitarian methods of detainment, deterrent, and rehabilitation are illogically or morally wrong. We have nothing to fear from the absence of free will, any more than we should fear the absence of divine command for moral objectivity. And just closing, I just wanted to mention, you know, some of the following things to watch from my opponent, some of his tricks. He'd probably be looking to deny the causal nature of reality, leaning on our ignorance of physics or the mind to create a gap where free will can hide, appealing to consequences and emotion rather than addressing the lack of evidence for free will, a universe with free will, if spun correctly, would appear to be one, would appear to be identical to one with none. So if that is the case, and that is the type of free will that my opponent puts forward, then I say that we should be skeptical of such a metaphysical claim. Remember, even if I do not have, if I've not put forward a case for the non-existence of free will, the default position to the ontologically positive claim that free will exists is to suspend belief until it is justified. I'm not saying my opponent is a compatibilist, but he may share some of the same emotions, some of the sentimentality around it, that people are free to choose, and the sacred straw man of a future where the absence of metaphysically conferred moral responsibility will lead to the breakdown of a modern and caring society. So all I ask is people embrace the truth of the evidence empirically, and not embrace the emotional appeal of fairy tales. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. And now Trevor will argue against the proposition.
Okay, thanks. So I just have to delete all of the fairy tales I've written. Yeah, it's still about 7 minutes. So, okay, here we go. Okay, I'll come clean that determinism makes sense. As a strictly epistemological worldview, it's pretty much the only conclusion one can reasonably arrive at without summoning the supernatural. We're talking about science, after all, and observation. And most skeptics I've spoken to about the subject are determinists, and even my own son has insisted that his own will isn't entirely free, but subject instead to all the influences upon him. He's only 12, but he's already reasoned himself into a position of nihilism more than adequate for his teenage years. Very impressive. Now, there's an argument most skeptics are familiar with. It's called the argument from ignorance, and it goes like this. Who created the universe? Don't you know? You don't? Well, it must be God, then. But of course, that argument doesn't work. Just because your opponent can't provide an answer, it doesn't automatically mean that your own answer is sufficient. And in the case of who created the universe, the question is so inadequate, it hasn't even established that there's anything to be ignorant about. But luckily, I'm not going to be using the argument from ignorance, because I'm not looking to prove anything. I'm looking to refute a rather arrogant statement from my opponent, and all I have to do is argue for ignorance. I believe I can, if not prove my own case, then at least load enough evidence onto my side of the scales in favor that free will is not an illusion. The questions I ask will make enough sense to establish exactly what John is ignorant about. Firstly, who is the agent of free will? What makes the decision? Who am I? Who and what are you? John, it seems, is happy to call himself an electrical meat machine. While that may be fine for him, and a wonderful pawn name, should he ever enter the field, it does little in philosophical terms that abdicate moral responsibility. The hard determinist is not just somebody who can beat up a regular determinist in a fight. Oh no, it means several things, each of them equally mistaken. It means that the self is only a result of forces acting upon it, and nothing more. Not just that personalities are shaped by their environments, but that they are utterly condemned to follow the programs embedded in them by their experiences. A kind of discredited Pavlovian nonsense B.F. Skinner threw away his life pursuing. It also means that, as our responses are locked, the entire universe is an enormous clockwork machine predicted and certain from inception to heat death. We are imprisoned in this one-to-one scale orrery, without hope of alteration until the depletion of these rotting cadaverous shells. Don't imagine we can do any different because free will is an illusion, albeit one shared by the entirety of the human race. Quite a bold statement, though, isn't it? In order to dash any or all of these statements, don't I have to dismantle John's clockwork world? Find some evidence that the universe, or at the very least humanity, is not limited to purely physical existence. Shouldn't be too hard. I do have the entirety of existence from which to choose, after all. But this is a fixed game, and the dice are weighted. Like everybody else, I have only material instruments with which to measure the world. This means surely that I'm finished. Surely the materialists, who flounce about profoundly, yelling, "We are nothing more than meat puppets, and death brings only oblivion, aren't I brave?" have won. But let's have a look at the tools of the materialist. I'm not demanding a trousers-down inspection here. I'm only asking for a look at the rules of conduct. How far does the hard determinist go from strict measurement to interpretation? Do you measure an earthquake on seismic equipment? No. You measure vibrations. You infer the earthquake. Now, it's fair enough to say that earthquakes exist. We've seen them. But let's change it just one level. Have you ever seen a proton? Have you touched one? What did it taste like? No, you've no idea. But we're all happy to subscribe to the underpinning idea of the periodic table. If we turn to subatomic particles, don't worry, I'm not going to whine about their strange behavior. But we can only construct machines to take measurements we then extrapolate into their existence. We can all accept their existence because, even though their behavior is bloody strange, you have to admit, their existence doesn't make materialists nearly as uncomfortable as the existence of something ephemeral and transcendent like free will. So when I say I believe I exist as an independent self, and you exist as well, and Rob almost certainly exists. I've never met you, Rob, but I have my doubts about the existence of Steve, but I've met him now. And when I say all this, you say, no, it's an illusion. An illusion suffered by the entirety of the human species, as I said. Why would you do that? Does the postulation of a non-physical entity or plane of existence pose such a problem? I guess it would. If you're so very comfortable with materialism, then I suppose you would rather live and die in a determinist universe than exist in some unknowable maelstrom of unrecordable events. Rather than admit the existence of a purely intellectual entity anywhere in the universe, you dismiss the one you have intimate knowledge of, yourself. Intellectual entities exist. Their existence is not, as a materialist would insist, a purely subjective concern. Pi, for example, is an objective mathematical truth. As an object of purely intellectual property, it exists, awaiting discovery. It doesn't physically exist anywhere in the physical universe. It can't. It's infinite. If you filled the entirety of known space with computers all calculating the farthest decimal point of infinite numbers, they would never reach an answer, because it's necessarily true of an infinite number that you can't. But, although those arguing for the supernatural often abuse the concept of infinity, I'll grant you, it is a proven, practical, existent intellectual entity nonetheless. You may say, but how does it exist? Where is it? But I hope you don't, as that would be an intentionally dishonest misunderstanding of the word intellectual underneath you. Now, I want to look at Cartesian dualism. Descartes' Cogito Ergo Sum, the declaration that I think, therefore I am, is simple, profound, beautiful, and true. The materialist would like this to become, I think, therefore I am, an electrical process generated within an animal to better his evolutionary prospects, with an unnecessary illusion of self in order to motivate. Hardly an improvement, and I'm buggered if I can work out the Latin for it. If the ability to identify with Descartes' original statement were not the pervasive worldwide norm, then the argument for illusion might stand up better. But the cogito stands instead, and for better reasons. Now, I don't know exactly what the self is, but I know that I have one. I don't know what happens to you when you die, and I don't pretend to. There are, however, all sorts of possibilities. By eliminating them all, because you will never be able to measure them, is making as unfalsifiable and therefore meaningless a claim as having randomly selected a religious text. By demanding the superiority of things you cannot prove, you are potentially hurting the skeptical cause. Scientists can accept the illusion argument as not applying to them. If we are only studying the philosophical merit of the proposal, then you are laboring under dogma as much as any subscribing to a religion. Immaterial things exist, ideas exist, concepts exist and can be communicated. Engineering and mathematics would be worthless without them. If you want to absent yourself from the discussion, as many scientists do, then that's fine, but don't weigh back in with an unchangeable point of view and an untestable hypothesis as though you put in the time. It's disingenuous, it's lazy, and it's unworthy of a skeptic. You might think that's a bit harsh, but you clearly can't blame me if you think it's not my fault. Thank you. And I think I was under 7 minutes.
Oh, you did well.
No.
Was I not? Ah, oh, what was I?
Just 40 seconds over. Better than John's 1 minute 20 over.
Oh, shit, really?
For the win.
Oh, what? And I was reading slow because I thought I needed to pad time.
But this is what decides the winner, guys. So I think at this point we should move on to John's rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Rob. Firstly, the one thing I wanted to eviscerate was this concept of, you know, people. Everybody seems to think that they have this, therefore somehow that's good evidence for the existence of the free will, which is patently absurd, because there's plenty of people that would claim that they feel the Holy Spirit or the presence of spirits, ghosts, Elvis or aliens. And you can't really say that that is therefore evidence for those kinds of phenomena. Basically, facts about an objective reality are to be found in objective, independently verifiable evidence, not in what we feel or want to be what we want to be true. A better example, perhaps, of something that everybody at least feels, although it would seem that scientific evidence is against it again, and maybe less contentious, would be this concept of duality that we have, where we do feel that we have a mind which, although it sits within a body, for some reason we do, it feels natural that that would be able to transcend the body and that it is actually separate. And I'd say that is built into, it's been built into me. But unfortunately, again, that's another thing that science doesn't bear out, because we don't see minds floating around without bodies. We haven't seen an instance of a mind without a body. So using inductive reasoning, we've come to the conclusion that minds are contingent upon the physical, upon the body. And also, I think my opponent's attempt to try and paint my position as dogmatic is pure sophistry in a way, because I'm accused of being intellectually dishonest because I've committed to a position without absolute certainty. But absolute certainty, in a way, it is a red herring. I'm only able to use the evidence before me, evidence about the universe, which has led me to conclude that determinism is true. And obviously, I'm using the definition of free will, which I think that we agree on, this free will where we are free from causality, in a way. You need to be free from causality. And that just doesn't seem to be the case. So I'm using the evidence that's in front of me. Now, to say that that is dogmatic, or in some way that because I'm not considering all the possibilities, even though the other possibilities may not be open to inquiry through empiricism, is basically saying that acceptance of evolution or belief an apple will fall when dropped are dogmatic in a way. Apparently accepting certain axioms such as inductive reasoning being a valid method, apparently that is intellectual dishonesty because there may be some other way of knowing that I don't know about. And if that is my opponent's true position, then I'm going to have to charge him a bit with promoting solipsism, because I can't see how, if that is how we're going to go forward, then it's a bit misguided coming into a debate if we can't agree on whether there is actual a truth and how to get to it. The debate over free will determinism and determinism has been going on for centuries. I've only tried to argue by looking at scientific understanding of the universe, and trying to ignore the fallacious appeals to emotion and bad consequences, which I thought my opponent was going to ignore, but he kind of did get it in there, not using it as a proper argument, but appealing to the emotion that we're all meat machines and, there's no such thing as moral responsibility. Again, that's not really addressing, the truth of it. But I understand the rules of the debate. Obviously, I'm taking the position for, so I have to make a case. But just to point out that my opponent has not produced any evidence for the ontologically positive claim that free will exists. And obviously, that's a bit of a sticking point for me. And again, if I haven't met standards of evidence, I think it's only fair, if there's no evidence for something, not to accept it. And to summarize, I didn't come here professing to have absolute knowledge of reality. I can only say that I look in at the world in terms of, you can call it a faith-based position, but we all have to accept that we live in an objective reality. Otherwise, what's the point in having a debate? Because I believe in the scientific method, and empirically it seems that the universe is determined, and determinism is not compatible with free will, I can safely say that I don't believe in free will any more than I believe in fairies, the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, or the God of the Bible. Just thought, get it there. So, to say my argument's not sound because I'm not omniscient, or because I'm not absolutely certain, is, or because I'm not seeing something, appealing to ideas or concepts which exist, but they are all contingent upon the physical, just as free will would be if it existed. But it's not compatible. So just, that's kind of twisting the definition of truth so that in the end we know nothing. And I admit, the perception that I have of having free will, although persuasive on an immediate conscious level, it disagrees with the very nature of the universe that we've studied using methods, objective methods, to understand the nature of reality. And, you know, that's it.
That's it.
I avoided the insult at the end there because.
Good man.
All I'm sure is my opponent. He doesn't think that reality is purely subjective. I'm sure he does believe there's some kind of objective standard in there. So I'll leave it at
that. That wasn't it.
No.
I was about 5 seconds of dead air, and then you thought, how can I turn this around? I know, I was going to say something about your mum.
That's not true.
Beautiful pricey, though. Okay, and so, let's move on to Trevor's rebuttal. Trevor?
Okay, the rebuttal, or rather the deleted scenes from the original, everything that I cut out. But the first of them... I've got to come to the argument that if you went back in time and replayed everything, it would all be exactly the same. Well, clearly that says nothing for either position, is it? Is a slow hand clap going to work on a podcast? Because I really feel like giving my name. The construction of the entire universe is and will remain for some time a purely intellectual conceit. It's not a practical map of existence. We pretend that we know everything about causality, and we just don't. It doesn't mean that we should ignore all sorts of things that we've learned, but when you say about when I accept, say something about dogma and I should just believe in fairies, no. The thing that that you've accepted as dogma is what some scientists have accepted because in their field of science, it is a waste of their time to deal with anything that might be immaterial or purely intellectual or even spiritual. It just doesn't enter their frame of reference. So they ignore it, and when they hear a philosopher come up with the idea that it's all an illusion and there is only the material universe, it makes their world that much easier to deal with. And then I've got a couple of other little points that I gave, little titles as I cut them from my original essay. One of them is about vanity. Don't imagine that I'm just being vain, saying we've all got free will, because we're human beings and we're all marvelous and wonderful and we're sunbeams for Jesus. Now, there's plenty of vanity in materialism. A barb often dug into the flesh of free will is that we subscribe to the definition of the soul, that self-aggrandizing product of religion that's so easy to shoot down. Well, John, could you please stop doing that to the figure standing next to me? You're getting straw everywhere and you'll chafe. I say nothing about a soul, but your claims are just as bombastic and just as vain. You've just given yourself less time to enjoy them than the religiously deluded. You've changed effectively nothing about the world and how we all operate within it, but the sacrifice of your autonomy on the cross of determinism is worryingly messianic, don't you think? I thought you might have a go at Descartes, because he's quite rightly often scorned for his religious conformity and his laughably weak proof of God's existence. But there's every reason to believe that he was an atheist, or at worst a deist. His proof of God, that because the concept of God describes him as perfect, supremely perfect, and any supremely perfect being must necessarily exist, therefore God exists, is clearly ridiculous, and probably intentionally so. His gravestone reads, "He who hid well, lived well." Maybe I'm wrong, maybe he was into show tunes, but I believe that he was just hiding from the religious. Now anyway, you've got physical disproofs of the self. You say, what about the physical exceptions? You'll say things like multiple personality syndrome. I was expecting you to throw at me. Because you can have more than one free will. If I subscribe to the idea that there is one, then there's more than one per person. There are things like corpus callosum surgery, separation subjects. People whose brain hemispheres have had the connective tissue between them damaged or removed and find another distinct personality insidiously making demands on their lives. And, of course, there's the favorite argument winner for the lazy materialist, the PED or MRI brain scans. Look, they shout, pointing at a brief colored flare on a picture of someone's brain. That was when the subject chose a pint of Guinness over a pint of water. That means this part of the brain is the Guinness-choosing area, and it sparked before or long after the decision was made, thus proving the brain is the totality of human experience. ridiculous for a number of reasons, not least of which is the fact that the entirety of my brain seems to be the Guinness choosing section. Look, they continued, this bit lights up when he plays music, and this bit when he farts, and both if he does a particularly tuneful fart. Exactly how so-called scientists jump feet first into the correlation-causation fallacy to prove that the brain is not only the seat of human intelligence, but its one and only constituent, is baffling to me. I don't deny the importance of the brain in both developing and perhaps entirely creating the cells we all possess, but why does a computer program that paints a bit of brain red when it registers an electrical charge prove that nothing else is involved? Our friend and fellow skeptic, neuroscientist Dr. Dean Burnett, expressed similar frustrations at the simplistic interpretation by science media of brain scans. And this was a serious and earnest complaint from Dean in a pub. So you know he means it. Anyway, what else did you say? Oh yeah, suspending belief. You were saying about something about suspending belief in crazy things, like why shouldn't we suspend belief in things that are just posited without any proof? But there is proof for ourselves, and that's what you're asking people to suspend belief in. And it's the way that we operate in the world is proof. People's beliefs in God are not proof of God, but people's beliefs are proof of people. And when you say things like, we haven't seen any souls or any selves, well, we haven't seen pie. Like I said, it can't physically exist anywhere. It's too big. But the relationships still exist. The number and the concept are still brilliantly useful. They definitely exist in the universe, but they're only intellectual. I've actually got about another page of concluding remarks, but I don't know how many minutes I have left.
You have just about 1 minute.
Okay, I'll go for it. There was always the worry that in this debate we would reach a kind of intellectual stalemate, that the proofs we offer to support our arguments might equally support the opponent if you only interpret it slightly differently. That might suggest we end our debate at an impasse, but I have another argument. Let's assume there are no real proofs in either direction, and to be fair, there aren't. It is only my leaning towards philosophy of mind and your leaning towards causality and materialism that separates us. But here's the nail in that particular coffin. We both subscribe to the principle of Occam's razor, that entities should not be multiplied beyond necessity, or the simplest answer tends to be the most likely. You argue that my case is complex because it brings the possibility of a whole plane of existence. I've already shown the existence of intellectual objects and at least one intellectual operator, me. And of course for you, the proof would be of you. They are proofs for me, and I'm happy with them. I argue that because you are afraid of acknowledging this uncomfortable metaphysical proposition, you construct an evolutionary trick we each of us play upon ourselves. Neither explanation is fully satisfactory, but yours, John, has the added benefit of a bizarre kind of masochism, a slavish devotion to the materialist principle so devout you spill your freedom over it. I know you're an exalted company, John, but as I said before, I can excuse a practical concession to the nature of one's study. That's not what you're saying, so why have you clambered up on that already crowded cross? There is no scientific consensus. Neuroscience can't decide, psychology can't decide. Every so often a philosopher will get on the telly and say something contentious, but what could be more contentious than we have no free will? It gets you on the telly. Physicists and biologists will usually chime in on your side, but the clue is in the titles. Physical and biological concerns motivate them. Intellectual masochism sounds a little bit grubby and sordid, and I worry that I'm participating in something here which you've been looking forward to a bit too much. I want you to get something out of this debate, John. I never wanted it to get something out of you. I thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Beautiful sentence to end on.
Oh, that's lovely.
Sorry, I wish I could have not ended on a bit of an insult, but I'd already written it down.
You were forced to read it.
Well, oh. You know, when you're reading something like that, you think, is this just too good not to say?
I'm on a roll.
Okay, and so we finish with the 20-minute questions and answer session with John to start.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I thought of loads of questions, to be honest. I just want to make a couple of points, maybe some concessions as well towards Trev, you know, just to show that I'm not completely empty and throw myself up on a cross, or you know, joining all of the physicists on their materialistic bus. As far as the neurology concerned and the behaviour of neurologists jumping up and down when they see you know, things lighting up and this causation, correlation equals causation. I completely agree. I think that's bad science, and I agree with our friend Dean on that. It's oversimplification. So I can, and that is why you were probably surprised that I didn't pull that argument, because I don't think it's a particularly strong one.
That's right. I still argued against you, but that was a bit of intellectual dishonesty on my part.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'd written it down. I thought it sounded good.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wrote things down which, you know, you didn't get to, but I had to just make them fit other stuff. But
you got to shoot down the weak arguments just in case they might get brought up later, don't you?
No, sure. And you know, this Q&A session, I know Rob's, you know, I don't want to rain on the parade, and I told him questions and answers, but I'd write, you know, if you're happy to do it as a discussion, we may be able to perhaps get somewhere a bit quicker.
Sure, I don't mind.
Okay. Now, I mean, for me, the you might say I'm just looking at this simplistically, but, you know, you agree that determinism looks right, yeah?
Generally, yeah.
And do you feel that, you know, the fact that determinism looks true, do you, you can obviously see the conflict with free will there?
Actually, no. I think determinism in a physical universe works, and we're operating in that physical universe. So we make our decisions with free will, I believe, but in reaction to the physical events around us. So when you rewind time and it all happens again exactly the same, well, duh. It's the people are operating their free will in exactly the same way. It doesn't mean that everything's predetermined, or that there wasn't the option to take something else.
But if you did rewind it and everything was the same, then how can you say there was a choice, because they're going to pick the same one every time?
That's only an argument for... it's like if you went into the future and looked back and then told everybody, you can't choose what you're doing because I've seen the future already. Well, big whoop. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. That's an argument about the nature of time rather than the nature of free will.
But when I said that free will is constrained, you know, obviously our free will is constrained by, say, gravity. You know, we can't just will ourselves to fly in the air. So we're obviously not free in that respect, are we?
Well, intellectual entities, we've got no idea if there is any physical component to them. I very much doubt it, because there's just sheer concepts, like pi, for instance. That doesn't physically exist anyway. There's only proofs of the fact that it works. Oh, I've forgotten where I was going. Can you pick up on something else?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll pick up on pi. I mean, pi is the ratio of the circumference to the radius, okay? That's what that is, and pi is a description of that. Okay, so when we say it exists, we say, you know, our description of it exists. But it's not some platonic thing somewhere that physically exists. But in order for the concept of pi to exist...
Wait just a sec. Plato, when he talked about platonic ideals, as we should say to everybody, it's the Plato's forms are the ideas...
Forms, sorry, yeah.
That there is the existence of... some kind of perfect form. When I say chair, everybody else is thinking of a chair, but not necessarily the same chair, but we're all partaking of the perfect form of the chair. And somewhere there exists this perfect form of the chair as an idea. Now, it doesn't actually mean that there physically exists this idea anywhere. It posits that there's a plane of existence that is purely intellectual. And that, it's a bit of a strange... airy-fairy, artsy-fartsy idea, and lots of people won't give it the time of day, but it's very difficult to disprove, because when we make intellectual judgments, when we come up with ideas, when we listen to an idea, when we understand a new idea for the first time and it changes our opinion on something, these things are purely intellectual. You can't say... my brain now weighs something different because I took in that idea and it changed my mind.
No, but
the idea that you're saying is Where's the existence of this thing? And I just want to pull you up on that. The existence is purely intellectual.
Sure.
It doesn't
sure.
have to be located anywhere, and it's no color, no weight.
No. Yeah. I understand. But what I mean is, all of these ideas, you know, let's take the concept of a concept itself. Okay. It's completely. It is contingent on the physical, is it not?
Some certainly are. I believe that people are contingent on the physical because we've got to have brains to create our personalities. But your argument is that that's the entirety of our personalities is somewhere within that complex computer, and I'm not necessarily signed up to that.
Okay. So if, would you say the mind is contingent on the brain? Would you agree with that one?
Yeah. I don't believe there's any kind of weird prehistory where minds are floating around waiting for a brain to latch onto. That's mental. That's, in fact, Scientology.
Correct. Well, some Scientologists, maybe. If the mind is contingent on the brain and the brain operates in the physical world, where does the free will come from? Because if I can give you an analogy, this is how I see your argument, okay? And if it's wrong, then obviously you get to correct me.
Sure.
And you know, it's kind of going back to this neuroscience as well, where because the brain's not understood. And we have this thing called consciousness, which we both agree is contingent on the brain. But we have this consciousness, and you're saying that we don't know for definite that it's because it's contingent on the physical that therefore it obeys the same rules, causality is the physical. Am I in the right ballpark?
Yeah, when we've discussed it before, you've come up with the phrase emergent property.
Yeah. Okay. So
that sounds, it's a bit of a kind of weasel word kind of way of saying it. It's
yeah.
Like it's still physical.
Well, okay. But the analogy I'd like to put on the table is that it's like the brain is this big complex thing, and when people say that. Well, it's physical, but the mind isn't, and it's contingent, but it's not physical. I kind of see that as somebody who's created a giant, complex machine, okay, and laid it on the ground, and then what they've done is they've gone and thrown like tarpaulin on certain parts of it, so you can't see it working, and then they're saying that the free will is under there, if you know what I mean.
So just because there's a sheet in the way.
Yeah, basically,
does she represent our scientific inability to study the brain?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically ignorance in effect. It's we don't know how it works, therefore.
Okay, I'll use your analogy then. Somebody's got some machines doing some work. Let's call them computers, and there are some other computers very far away, and they've all been linked up by phone lines. And the mind is the internet. The internet is not a physical thing.
Well,
it's contingent on all of the physical machines all working together.
Hmm.
But when you talk about the internet itself, or when you run search engines and things,
sure. But
you're accessing the entire world.
But the internet being contingent on the physical is limited in the same way that the physical is. I mean,
when you kill a person, I'm not going to argue that their mind carries on.
So, okay.
I'm not going to totally discount the possibility, but. It seems unlikely and wishful thinking.
Okay, fine.
That's one of the reasons why I argue with the idea that free will is an illusion, because most of the arguments I hear from people when we've discussed it in Skeptics in the Pub, people will argue against things like the soul and various other straw men that tend to be attached to it, because most people who will argue for free will are doing it... are religious believers who have an extra bunch of baggage. It's easy to attack the baggage.
Gentlemen.
Hello?
10 minutes.
Oh, crikey. Oh.
Excellent. No, I agree. But the thing is, I've never argued against it, thinking that that's where somebody was coming from. But as I said, I just look at it from the case of, you know, we agree that the universe is deterministic. And even if we just say, let's forget the physical aspect of it. Let's forget that. Let's just think of it purely in terms of reasoning. Okay? We make decisions because of reasons. We have reasons to make decisions. You don't make a decision based on no reason. And even if you did, that's not will, is it? That's just doing something random. So again, the will is being determined by reason. So
I get the idea that you can use the idea of everything being determined, and even if you subscribe to the intellectual existence of the mind, then it's still determined by all the various influences on it. But what about things like some incredibly complex moral dilemma that you might find yourself in? There are all kinds of influences you can look to, but you just have to decide for yourself.
Right.
And but you can spend a very long time weighing up the pros and cons, and sometimes you have to flip a coin to find out what you really think. And the argument that free will is an illusion just makes out that it's a computer program. And I think that's too reductionist, certainly at the moment. I don't doubt that it might be the case in the future that you can argue for that kind of thing. But there's no way at the moment a philosopher can make the argument and be content that they're on the right track.
Well, as I said, you know, I don't want to argue with any type of certainty. I'm just pointing to the fact that determinism, that we both agree is true, and that it doesn't work in, you know, in terms of the free will, where, you know, not being bound to the causal universe. You know, I think because our minds are contingent upon the universe, they, you know, they follow the same rules at the end of the day. And I just don't feel... Sorry, that sounds a bit wishy-washy, doesn't it? But, you know, the fact that everybody thinks they have free will, I think, you know, that can't be acceptable, surely, as a reason to think that therefore it exists, because, well, I mean, go on, tell me differently. So, you know, if everyone said tomorrow, well, you know, and a lot of people do say that, you know, the world looks so well designed, you know, there's this teleological element to everything, to them.
But you're making a distinction, what's the way to put it? It's the difference between an object and its class. The person who is making a decision about something that they viewed or something that they've been asked can be wrong quite easily. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they are a person who is choosing the wrong answer is something that's... that there are very few things, I would argue, that are innate or a priori, but that is one of them. The fact that when you ask a question, you answer it. When you are asked a question, you are the one that answers it, and you decide.
Yeah, but what I mean is, are you perhaps going one step too far? Surely the only conclusion you can draw from that is that there is something that is answering, not there is this me and ascribing this property of free will, of this entity that is...
I'm sorry, I just assumed that you also can say, I think, therefore I am, and actually feel like that makes sense.
I think it makes sense in so much that I feel that I have free will. However, you can argue against Descartes and say that saying that I think therefore I am is going too far. It should be there is thinking, therefore something is thinking. Not, you know, it goes too far epistemologically, saying that there is something which I call I.
Right, but the something that is thinking, that's still describing a decision-making entity.
No, it's something that makes decisions, something that thinks.
It's the ability, even at the most reductionist, it's the ability of a brain to perceive its own machinations. That perception is remarkable, and it's prevalent. We all feel it. And I'm not saying that that proves anything, but I believe that anybody who wants to say that free will is an illusion, when faced with that apparently universal idea, is fighting an uphill struggle. And it's like extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. There's certainly no extraordinary evidence to say that free will is an illusion, and I believe it is an extraordinary claim.
Okay. But we agree that just saying that you think something's true doesn't make it true, yeah? So, I mean, you agree that that's a pretty...
But you keep saying that.
I know. Well, okay.
The fact that you think that something is true proves that you're thinking it.
No.
That you can think something absolutely wrong.
Sure. But what I'm saying is your argument then, excuse me. A lot of people would not agree, and I think we would agree, that, that the universe is, there is an objective reality. Yeah?
Yeah.
And do you class it as exactly the same thing then? That because everybody thinks that there's an objective reality, that therefore there is?
Well, I'm not a solipsist. I don't believe there's just me and the things that I perceive.
Okay.
I think there is a universe out there, and I believe that all the other people out there are perceiving it as well, or not necessarily in exactly the same way. I just believe that we all of us believe that we have free will, so that the argument against it is counter to our own expectations. So
no, sure. Okay.
What have you got?
So what I've got, right, okay, is if that we agree that reality is objective, okay, and
right,
that we should accept the findings of inquiry that work on objective reality, okay, if they differ, if they give us a different conclusion to our subjective thoughts, which one should we choose?
I don't believe that they do offer anything different. I think when somebody goes out there with physical instruments trying to measure for the supernatural and for the immaterial, and they say, we haven't found anything, then it doesn't mean that they don't exist. But if you find something that shows the effect of something that is immaterial or supernatural, like the self, then although we can't necessarily describe exactly what the self is, because we can't measure it, we certainly can't throw it away.
No, I'm talking about free will.
It's like trying to explain
self.
The concept of blue when all you've got is a bunch of black and white photos of a blue wall.
No, sure, I agree. But I'm just talking about in terms of free will. As I said, determinism doesn't seem to work with that concept. And I'm saying you're giving preference to the fact that everybody believes they have free will. You're saying, I'm afraid that just trumps the empirical evidence that we have about the universe.
No, I'm saying that I don't believe that the empirical evidence of the universe translates into a denial of free will. I think that is an extra conclusion added on for slightly masochistic reasons that I don't fully understand.
Well, I understand, but, if there's no motive behind it, if it's just, the result of reasoning that everything has a cause, if your actions all have a cause, then how can you say that those actions were made through free will?
Because I believe that there's room for flipping a coin just for... Not flipping a coin, because that would bring in the material universe. And every time you rewound the coin, it would fall exactly the same way.
Okay, but all right,
you're randomly deciding something or being bloody-minded, and that's not the same thing as saying I could design a computer program that when it sees a zero, says it sees a one.
Okay, so let's say there is room for, let's just say there is room for randomness, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, how is will determined by randomness free?
You can have random thoughts that pop into your head, and you still use your free will to define which ones are of worth to you. What I mean is that randomness allows for things like abstraction.
Okay. So you're saying that...
It's not time. That is the end of your 20 minutes, gents.
Oh, thanks.
Blimey.
Oh, well. Oh, thanks very much, guys.
Cool.
So,
we were... We ended up getting a really tiny part of the argument. Like we're down the bottom of a very, very small, thin hole, arguing.
I can see a chink of light.
Yeah, I think it was just as well you ended it where you did, because well, I don't towards
about
the end.
To kick my ass, were you?
No. As I said, you know, I was looking for ways to open it up, but it was just this, you know, we almost ended up basically back onto, you know, indeterminacy, which would kind of it works even worse than determinacy as well. So
there's another way to have a go at free will, but that's probably another hour.
Yeah, no, definitely. So this is the bit now where Rob decides that you're the winner because you had more jokes and you were wittier.
Not necessarily the case at all, John.
No.
I think it's a tricky one. I mean, it's tricky for John, definitely. I mean, you've got the harder proposition there. You basically put yourself in a position where you're arguing something that I can't imagine many people actually want to agree with you. I mean, I know I personally don't want to agree that I don't have any free will, but I can understand that there's an argument for that. And it's a tricky one because you have to prove to us without a doubt that determinacy is the king and that it does determine everything, and that because of that, there is no free will.
Before you continue, oh, it sounds like you're going to condemn me, but just before you continue, I did want to say that, you know, to argue against a determinate universe is basically saying, well, you'd be saying that, you know, we can't have experience in a way, and you're saying the scientific method wouldn't work, and I would argue, well, that does work, so that's more evidence that determinacy is true. But carry on.
Fair enough.
I just wanted to get that out there, because if I didn't defend, you know, science in a determinate universe, then I would have been kicking myself.
It's all right. I wasn't trying to take determinism away. I fully subscribe to it in the physical universe. It's the extrapolations were too dodgy for me.
Okay, that's fine. And well, we know exactly where we disagree now.
Cool.
And I'll
then
see you
taking it to the other side, I think taking it to the other side, unfortunately, Trevor had a much easier position because he didn't have to prove that free will is not an illusion. He just had to prove that you couldn't prove free will is an illusion. And I think he did excellently at that, unfortunately, John.
Hey. But, that's the finest backhanded compliment I've ever got. Thank you.
But hey. I think when you get right down to it, I don't think you can win that argument, guys.
No, I know. That's why we're doing it, because it's fun.
Yeah, if there were a winner, it would be pretty tedious.
It would be over in 5 minutes, yeah.
If we wanted...
There is no free will. Look, here's the evidence. Oh, all right.
If we wanted to win a debate, we'd just invite some fundies on and talk about the Bible.
Well, you did invite a fundie on. You know I'm a chart card-carrying deacon of the Church of Fairies.
Ah, I'm not going to make any announcements today, by the way, Trev. Don't worry.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much for making me the loser, Rob.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much for making him the loser.
My pleasure again.
So that means I now owe Trev a beer.
The only reason I'm arguing.
Yeah, you wouldn't bother otherwise.
His Guinness centres are firing like mad.
And I don't know, kicking the bollocks for you, I think, Rob, to be honest.
That's nice. Your workload just got heavier.
Cheers, bud. Well, thanks very much, guys. I'm now going to finish the podcast. So say goodbye, Rob. Hopefully we'll have you back on soon.
That'd be lovely. I had a great time.
Good. Cool. Next time you'll have more speaking parts, I promise.
Silence.
And thank you, Trev, for beating me and handing my ass to me, or whatever you want to call it.
Right. I don't want to discuss anybody's asses. The end of the last podcast was too disturbing.
Fair enough. Okay, well, I'll sign out on the podcast. Thanks very much for everyone listening. See you next week.